Stand by for the fastest 60 minutes in Jewish radio. It's time for the Jewish Experience. Hi, everyone, and welcome back. 2 years of continuous Jewish broadcasting brought to you by the Jewish Experience. Hi, I'm Hirsch DeLynn, and then you are tuned in to Pittsburgh's only Jewish radio program, The Jewish Experience. The parsha this week is Yisro, or Jethro. Now, I know you've heard the song, Mother-in-Law, and it was not too complimentary, but this week we have Father-in-Law, and it's a whole different story. Yisro hears about all the miracles that God did for the Jewish people, so he takes his daughter, Moses' wife, and her two kids, and travels to meet Moshe in the desert. He sees Moses trying to handle and judge all the cases all day and says it's not fair to the people and not fair to Moshe. So he advises Moses to appoint some judges to help him out. And he delegates some of the lower cases. Moses checks with God and then does what his father-in-law suggests. And Yisro is rewarded by having a parsha named in his honor. Next, God tells Moshe to prepare the people to come to Har Sinai, the smallest of the mountains, to receive the Ten Commandments. They see the thunder and they hear the lightning. As Hashem, God, reveals the first two commandments to 3.2 million people directly assembled there. It's the only time in history where so many people were rewarded with a direct revelation of godliness. Most folks only hear about God from someone else, but the B'nai Yisrael, the Jewish people, heard it straight from on high. And then they couldn't handle it since their souls were leaping from their bodies and they had to be restored to them. So they told Moshe to go up and get the remaining commandments and bring them down. Stay tuned to see what happens on the next J.E. And speaking of bringing it down, our staff has brought down the best in educational Jewish radio with Musical Moish, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, and Ms. Deborah DeLynn. So sit back and enjoy 60 minutes of the best Jewish radio in Pennsylvania. Of course, we'll have your community announcements and mazel tovs along with current news fresh from Israel National Radio coming up on the half hour. Our special guest today is the Honorable Jason Bedrick, state representative from the great state of New Hampshire. Jason, or Yehoshua, will speak on the subject of school vouchers. So just keep cooking and keep listening, and you'll hear about an Orthodox Jew in the New Hampshire government. And don't forget to take time now to make a resolution to support Jewish radio in Pittsburgh. You can sponsor your favorite segment each week. Send an email to jewishexperience@verizon.net. Of course, you can call us at 412-979-5770, and we'll let you in on all the details. If you want to hear us on the air each week, you should write a check now and become a partner in this exciting endeavor. Rabbi Goldwasser's Torah lesson is sponsored by Reb Yisrael Zerlo. And the community news and announcements is sponsored by Kramer's Windows and Glass Block. The popular feminine perspective is now sponsored by Lens Landscaping. Rabbi Eisen's Moment in Jewish History is still available for sponsorship, so you should call right now and reserve your spot. Rabbi Goldwasser's popular story segment is once again available for sponsorship. Remember, if you enjoy listening to our program, your financial support is critical to making this program available to you in your homes each week. Our entire staff does work hard to bring you the best in Jewish programming, but, you know, we do rely on your generous support. And as always, we thank our regular sponsors, Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, Next Generation Financial Services, First Mariner Bank, Pittsburgh Simcha Orchestra, led by our own Musical Moishi, and Artistic Photography. Don't forget to ask for a special gift of a beautiful refrigerator magnet that is yours free when you call us at 412-979-5770, or, of course, you can always send us an email at jewishexperience@verizon.net. Don't forget, candlelighting time this week is no later than 5:30 p.m., and we're very excited to have back in the studios with us again Mr. Musical Moish himself. Here he is.
All right, well, it's a Friday afternoon. We're here at the J.E., and I'm good to go, and I hope everybody else is. Well, let's get you started with something brand new. Here's Yaakov Young and Yogati, because you're tuned in and good to go right here on the J.E.
אם ימם לחוק אדום אדום היי יוגעתי ולא עם מצוסיין יו יו יוגעתי ולא עם מצוסיין אל 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 תמי אם ימם לחוק אדום אדום היי יוגעתי ולא עם מצוסיין veloy matsasi al 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 tami avoli mama le khodom yakati matsasi matsasi tami avoli mama le khodom yakati matsasi matsasi tami avoli mama le khodom yakati matsasi Madonna Yo gatti velo in mazzosia Yo 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 gatti velo in mazzosia Al 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 tami
Rabbi Goldwasser's Parsha segment this week is sponsored by Reb Yisrael Zerlo in honor of the Refuah Shlema of Klal Yisrael for the healthy recovery of all the people of Israel. And now, our resident rabbi, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
This week's Sedra tells of the giving of the Torah at Har Sinai. Hashem revealed His will in the presence of millions of witnesses of different outlooks, walks of life, character, and so forth. They, in turn, transmitted it from generation to generation, uninterruptedly to our day. Thus, the truth of the Torah is constantly corroborated by millions of witnesses. Standing at the foot of the mountain in readiness to receive the Torah, the Jewish people proclaimed that they would first observe all its commands and subsequently attempt to understand them. Let us examine the logic underlying this approach to mitzvah observance. Man's physical body is not completely separate from his soul, and it is possible to understand many things about the soul from their parallels in the body. The physical body requires a daily intake of certain elements in certain quantities obtainable through breathing and food consumption. No amount of thinking, speaking, and studying all about these elements can substitute for the actual intake of air and food. All this knowledge will not add one iota of health to the body unless it is given its required physical sustenance. On the contrary, the denial of the actual intake of the required elements will weaken the mental forces of thought, concentration, and so forth. Thus, it is obvious that the proper approach to ensure the health of the body is not by way of study first and practice afterward, but the reverse, to eat and drink and breathe, which in turn strengthen also the mental powers of study and concentration. The same is true in the case of the soul. The elements which it requires for its sustenance are best known to its Creator, and at Har Sinai He revealed them to us, telling us that the air and food vital to our spiritual existence are Torah and mitzvahs. It is told of a famous philosopher, the author of elaborate philosophical system, that when it was pointed out to him that his theory was inconsistent with the hard facts of reality, he replied, "So much the worse for the facts." The normal approach of a person, however, is that opinions are derived from reality and not reality from opinions. No theory, however cleverly conceived, can change the facts. If it is inconsistent with the facts, it can only do harm to its adherents. The world is a perfectly coordinated system created by Hashem, in which there is nothing superfluous and nothing lacking. A man's term of life on this earth is just long enough to fulfill his purpose here. It is not a day too short, nor a day too long. Hence, if he should permit a single day or week, let alone months, to pass by without fulfilling his purpose, it is an irretrievable loss for himself and for the universe at large. Every day that passes for a person without practical living according to the Torah is a loss for himself and for all our people. Inasmuch as we all form a single unity and are mutually responsible for one another, as well as for the universal order and all theories attempting to justify such a mode of living, cannot alter this fact in the least.
Retirement can be a wonderful reward for years of hard work, but it can also be stressful as you deal with questions about how to maintain your standard of living while protecting what you worked so hard for. What if I told you that you could generate extra cash flow without touching a penny of your savings, investments, or current income? If you or someone you love is 62 years or older and owns their own home, they may be able to take advantage of a federally regulated program called a home equity conversion mortgage or reverse mortgage. Seniors all across the U.S. are using reverse mortgages to increase their cash flow for purchasing long-term care insurance, putting grandkids through college, making charitable donations, paying off credit card debt, paying for prescription drugs, buying vacation homes, and paying for much-needed home repair. Call for a free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet today. Get the facts and help yourself and your family through a reverse mortgage. Call Andy at 412-562-2220. for a free copy while supplies last. Again, that number is 412-562-2220 for your free copy of the Homekeeper Mortgage Consumer Fact Sheet. First Mariner Bank is an equal housing lender.
Will Israel ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read the Forward, the nation's Jewish newspaper. The Forward reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Forward also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first four issues free.
Call now for the Forward, 800-992-3333. That's 800-992-3333. All around us, life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time. And it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort. And did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch, at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience, 412-521-2600. Now it's time for A Moment in Jewish History with the author of Miraculous Journey, Rabbi Yosef Eisen.
The beginning of Reform Judaism. Understandably, many Jews found conversion to Christianity unacceptable, but still wished to be a part of Gentile culture. As such, they felt that by discarding much of the Torah they deemed to be irrelevant and resembling Christians as much as possible, their process of assimilation would be quickened. Accordingly, in 1810, Israel Jacobson opened a Reform temple and celebrated the festival of the Jewish Reformation. A choir of Jewish and Christian boys and girls sang prayers and hymns in German, accompanied by an organ, while the children's parents and friends, Jewish and Gentile, were in attendance. Church bells pealed, and Jacobson announced that from then on, Judaism would follow the spirit of the times. Followers of Reform called their houses of worship temples to emphasize their connection to the Judaism of the Bible rather than that of the rabbis and the Talmud. The Reform movement only sought to cast away as much of Torah observance as possible. As such, the Reform movement first focused on changing the traditional prayer service that had been followed for hundreds of years, whose customs have the force and sanctity of Minag Yisrael Dinhu, accepted Jewish law. To begin with, the Reformers removed as irrelevant one of the Yikum Perkon prayers, recited in the synagogue on Sabbath, which invokes divine mercy for the Torah scholars of Eretz Yisrael and Babylon. Once the wall had been breached, a flood of Reform innovations in the Siddur and in synagogue practice took place, and Reform temples began to resemble Protestant churches. In the 1840s, several Reform rabbinical assemblies rejected the authority of the Talmud. Some leaders even claimed that the Chumash itself is subject to human criticism, and that observance of its ritual commandments, such as kashrus, circumcision, and holidays, is optional. Maskilim, or secularly enlightened Jews, were a group with similar goals to reform Jews, but employing different methods to achieve them. Whereas the reform movement wanted to blur the distinction between Jew and Gentile in matters of observance, the Maskilim wanted to show the outside world that Judaism is a universal faith and not a collection of alien beliefs. To this end, in 1819, they set up an organization called the Society for Jewish Culture and Science. Its founder, Leopold Zuns, investigated Jewish history and practices, utilizing a modern scientific critical approach, completely denying the divine uniqueness of the Jewish people. In the words of the German philosopher Nietzsche, once it became possible to study scientifically the history of a religion, it was already dead. Heinrich Gretz, one of the Society's members, wrote a multi-volume Jewish history in which he claimed that the sages invented much of the oral law to further their own ends. The implication of all the pseudo-scholarship was that if the oral law was largely man-made and subject to change, it could also be amended in modern times. The Society disbanded after 5 years, and several of its prominent members converted to Christianity. This is Rabbi Yosef Eisen wishing you a happy and healthy Shabbos.
This week's news segment is brought to you by Kramer's Windows and Glass Block. When your requirements call for replacement windows or glass block, call Ed at 412-848-2262. That's 412-848-2262.
Now, from the Israel National Radio Newsroom, here's Ernie Singer.
Ahead of a meeting with PLO negotiator Saeb Erekat, American Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice saying there will be no surprises for Israel when she walks into talks between PLO Chairman Mahmoud Abbas and Prime Minister Ehud Olmert on February 19th. Dr. Erekat in Washington to provide the PLO with momentum from Thursday's unity government agreement signed in Mecca, Saudi Arabia. No single party will have an absolute majority in the PLO cabinet under the agreement. According to Al Jazeera TV, Hamas will have 9 seats, Fatah 6, and other parties 4, while 5 ministers will be independents, Hamas designating 3 independents, Fatah 2. The Bush administration troubled by the agreement, according to initial responses. White House Press Secretary Tony Snow saying, "We are going to have to see." Martin Indyk, former American ambassador to Israel, said the pact is going to present a real problem for the United States and Israel if the government does not meet the 3 conditions of renouncing terror and recognizing Israel and its existing agreements with the PLO. Meeting those terms is supposed to clear the way toward international aid for the PLO. Sources in Jerusalem estimate that if one takes into account Arab aid and money smuggled into the Hamas government coffers, the PLO comes quite close to meeting its annual budget of $1.1 billion. In addition, nearly all of the Arabs in Gaza receive aid from the United Nations Relief Works Agency and the World Health Organization. All in all, said a well-informed senior Israeli political source, the economic situation in Gaza, while not great, is certainly not one of hunger. Half an hour of rifle fire in the air Thursday evening following the signing of the agreement. Gaza terrorists continuing to take to the air with Qassam rockets Friday morning, the third straight day of escalated firings. A rocket landing near a security fence, not causing any injuries or damage. An exhibition of photographs called Unwilling Heroes opening in Sderot's Beit Ha'am Monday evening. The photos taken by Sderot resident Yossi Shitrit showed the effects of the constant barrage of Qassam rockets on daily life in Sderot and the western Negev. The exhibition will consist of 53 photographs taken since this past summer. Several Arab countries appealing to the United Nations Security Council to stop Israel's excavations and safety improvements to an access path from the Western Wall Plaza to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. The countries calling on Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to conduct a debate on the issue this coming week. Age restrictions on the Temple Mount for Friday Islamic prayers and in Nazareth, and increased police presence for a Muslim protest march. Lebanon has decided not to file a formal complaint to the Security Council about the border incident with Israel on Wednesday after the United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon made it clear it accepted Israel's version regarding the incident. A top officer in the Israeli Northern Command telling the Jerusalem Post that Hezbollah terrorists, as a result of the border flare-up, had readied themselves in preparation for additional violence, but stressed that Hezbollah did not appear as if it was ready to attack Israel and that the border incident seemed to pass as isolated. Hezbollah leaders demanding that Lebanon return a truckload of ammunition that authorities seized in a Beirut suburb Thursday night. Security Council ceasefire resolution 1701 from last summer's war prohibits the terrorist organization from smuggling or possessing arms. According to Lebanese Information Minister Ghazi Aridi, the preliminary information said the truck came from eastern Lebanon's Bekaa Valley. Defense Minister Elias Moore said the arms included rockets. Other sources said they were concealed by straw. Member of Knesset Jamal Zahalka of the Balad Arab Party flying to Montreal, where he will represent Israel as an apartheid state during what is being billed as the third annual Israel Apartheid Week. Referring to Israel's presence beyond the 1949 ceasefire lines, Zahalka telling Israeli journalists on Friday, calling the occupation apartheid is not an exaggeration, it's an understatement. Doctors at Meir Hospital in Kfar Sava striking between the hours of 8 and noon Sunday morning. The strike protesting the alleged attack against one of the doctors by a patient. The doctor filed a police complaint saying the patient broke his glasses. The Magen David Adom Red Star of David Emergency Services Central Blood Bank has highly sophisticated methods of checking blood in its groups by robots. Find out more on Walter's World with Walter Bingham on demand on the Internet at IsraelNationalRadio.com. Shabbat Kaf Beter, the 22nd of Shvat on the Jewish calendar, and the weather forecast, variable cloudiness with light rain Friday evening, clear to partly cloudy on Shabbat with a slight rise in temperature on Sunday and a chance of local drizzles Monday night. In Jerusalem and the Golan Heights on Friday, 13 degrees centigrade, 55 Fahrenheit. At the Red Sea, 22 degrees centigrade, 72 Fahrenheit. The Dead Sea, 19 degrees centigrade, 66 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
We want to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a very peaceful and restful Shabbat.
We only have one Mazel Tov this week, but it's a big one. Mazel Tov to the staff of the Jewish Experience radio program for celebrating 2 years of continuous broadcasting, serving the Pittsburgh Jewish community and the communities beyond as we become the favorite radio station of Tel Aviv University. Unbelievable as it is. Okay, let's get back to some serious stuff. Today at 5 p.m. at the Carnegie Mellon University Center, students and faculty members from Pittsburgh area college campuses will flock to the Wagon Gym to create the largest attended Shabbat meal ever on campus in Pittsburgh. Shabbat 1000, an event done on campuses across the nation, is being directed by Chabad House on campus and assisted by the Hillel Jewish University Center and the Jewish Heritage Programs. This event is only for university students and faculty. Check Shabbat1000.net for more information. And Chabad of Pittsburgh has a new series from the Jewish Learning Institute, The Kabbalah of Character. And it provides a wealth of practical tools, again, insight and chart your path to personal growth. It's Wednesdays through March 14th at two locations, 7:30 p.m. at the Yeshiva Girls School or 12:15 p.m. downtown at the Heinz 57 Center. The Meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, still meeting, Shari Torah, every Sunday evening from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Program's a recovery group for people who cannot control their eating and or their weight. Very, very successful. And you want to call Ilana for more information on that program, 412-422-2224. If you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, you can call us at 412-979-5770, or you can email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. And don't forget, candle lighting time this week still creeping up there, 5:30 p.m. We're glad to have in the studios with us this afternoon the Honorable Jason Bedrick, who is the state representative from the state of New Hampshire. And he's also known as Yehoshua. Jason, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Okay, glad to have you. And we're having you on the program today because you have spoken out quite a bit on school vouchers. And we want to talk about that because school vouchers is an issue, especially in Pittsburgh. We have three day schools here who are constantly on this issue of school vouchers and obviously all over it. I mean, it's to help obviously their people, you know, having the opportunity to attend, and also to encourage people that have never considered day schools to attend. Before we get into it, just let's talk about yourself just for a minute. You're a Orthodox Jew that's in the state legislature. How is running for office as an Orthodox Jew, having to obviously meet a lot of people and shake a lot of hands? How have you handled that?
Well, I guess the two challenges that I face that most other people don't face is Sabbath observance, mm-hmm. which means that I had to miss many of the traditional campaign events throughout the year, mm-hmm. and also as a Chabad Chassid, we don't shake hands with women,
right.
So I'd have to explain to every female voter that in my faith, touch between men and women is a very sacred thing and reserved for, you know, marriage and within the family.
Mm-hmm.
And that usually actually had a positive response.
Was this a tight campaign? I mean, were you did you have opposition? Did you have to actually go out and do the whole thing?
Yes, but New Hampshire has a very unique system. We have the largest state house in the country,
okay.
400 state representatives.
Wow.
So in my district, there are 13 seats, and the top 13 win, be they Republican or Democrat. So each party generally fields 13 candidates. So it wasn't really, you know, one-on-one, head-to-head campaigning. It was, but still, you know, everyone has to go door-to-door. Everyone
sure.
has to meet as many voters as possible.
Absolutely.
Give the speeches, et cetera.
How'd you get involved in politics altogether?
I got involved in politics in high school, and then picked up through college.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically, I was doing a paper for one of my political science classes in college, and it was on school choice. And I looked at the issue in New Hampshire, and I realized that there was a public school choice bill that failed by only one vote.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that since there were a number of people in my district who either didn't vote for it or voted against it, that I would get involved.
Now, are you aware that speaking of school choice, that in Utah they just won a hard-fought victory for school choice?
Yeah, okay. Actually, that's fantastic. I saw it. John Fund had an article about it in the Wall Street Journal
right.
the other day, and it's passed before in Utah in the Senate, and the governor has pledged to sign it. To my knowledge, it had failed several times in the House.
Right,
but I guess some people who had at once opposed it, one representative in particular who was at once a public school administrator, saw the merits of school choice, and so this is a very positive development. And I think that it's once it's proven to work in Utah, I think we're going to see it spread to other states.
Yeah, I've read as in preparation for speaking to you that that school choice everywhere it's been employed seems to have upgraded the school systems and has made them, not made them, but encouraged them to perform better than they would otherwise. And as I assume traditionally you would think, as always, the unions would be opposed to it. Is that what you found?
It's true. You know, the main argument against it is that people are afraid that when you take money away from the public schools, that the public schools are going to become worse and you're only going to aggravate the problem.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, because right now you have a monopolistic system that they are not willing to change, and when you have a competitive system and they're forced to compete, you find that in most cases they do rise to the challenge. And even though they lose money, depending on the state, there are some programs where actually as the students leave, there's a net gain. So it depends obviously how you structure the system. But either way, they've shown that a competitive system improves the public schools. And so this really isn't about trashing public schools.
Exactly.
It's about providing the best opportunities for the best education for as many students as possible.
Great. And take a look now and examine, since this is a Jewish radio program, the argument of vouchers specifically from a Jewish angle. Have you thought about that specifically, just in terms of halakha and Jewish observance?
Well, from a Jewish perspective, and for that matter, from a Christian or Muslim perspective, it allows you to send your children to a school where they're going to be raised in the values that you want them to be raised in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's of course a very important thing. Right now, people are paying taxes that are funding the public schools, which I think is very important. Universal education is very important. But those for whom the public schools do not meet their special needs, they're forced to pay a second time for their own schools. And
right.
I think that's a huge problem, and it's something that school choice alleviates.
So you don't think let's say, well, actually, in from a percentage basis, you don't think that everybody's going to flock to those schools and end up having to have empty public schools?
No, I don't, because, again, where it's been tried, that hasn't been the case.
Mm-hmm.
You do certainly have more people that leave, especially in cases where the public schools are failing the students. But when the public schools improve and they become competitive, You have some people that choose to remain in the public school system, others that choose to go to Jewish or Christian schools or other private day schools, Montessori schools, etc. So you're providing choice. You're providing opportunities for people, and people are going to make different decisions.
Well, here's
and
an interesting...
The public schools generally do not close down as a result of a school choice program.
In an argument against Jewish, not Jewish, argument against choice, there are some that say that if the schools are taking money, so to speak, that is normally earmarked from taxes, that are going to their specific schools, that they're going to be under intense scrutiny from governments and may have to sacrifice their own programs to meet these certain requirements. Where does that where do you see that fit in? I mean, have you seen that happen to day schools specifically? I know that's a big concern. If they take that money, that they're going to have to compromise on their own programs.
I don't know about any specific Jewish schools where that's happened. I do know that in many programs, they have a watered down version of school choice where they don't really rely on competition and innovation. And instead, they're trying to, you know, they're trying to say, oh yeah, we're for choice. You can go to these other schools now. But now, you know, our bureaucracy is sort of going to start meddling in their affairs. So really, what ends up happening is you're diluting the effect of competition because you have the same failed administrators trying mm-hmm. to run these other schools, and that is a big problem. And it's important that when you know. You're supporting a school choice program, you have to look at what you're actually supporting. You know, it's great in theory to be for school choice, but when you look at some of the actual legislation out there, there has been many problems like that. And you don't want these schools to lose their local control.
I think it's important to look at the important to look at the bill itself and see, you know, how that's going to affect and what kind of so to speak strings are going to come with these vouchers. Now, let's talk about your state. I mean, are you doing anything to introduce that in New Hampshire? Building any support in that area?
All bills have to be filed before December, and mm-hmm. I decided not to file any bills in my first year.
Okay.
I'm looking. There are other bills that have been filed related to school choice, and I'm going to be supporting those. But depending on what they say, but none of them have come before a committee yet. So it's hard to give an opinion on any of them yet until we're allowed to actually look at them and see what's in them. The Democrats have taken over this year for the first time mm-hmm. in over 50 years that they've had control of the House.
Mm-hmm.
So the system is running rather slowly,
okay.
unfortunately.
And so, with this, speaking of that, with this whole revolution now flipping over from 94 conservative revolution to this 2006, liberal revolution, which a lot of people argue that's not the case. It's really more just dissatisfaction with the war and that sort of thing.
Correct.
But... do you see the voucher movement accelerating nationwide? From what you've read and seen throughout the nation, or just let's say Utah's a win, but it's still going very slow?
Well, I can say that we've certainly hit a speed bump in many states, including my own.
Mm-hmm.
But because of Utah and because of the exciting things that are going on in New Jersey, and I heard that Governor Spitzer in New York is also pledged, I believe, at least a public school choice program, I do see the school voucher movement picking up steam. And I think that a lot of eyes are going to be looking at Utah's system to see how that works. Right now, there's a number of states that do have programs, school choice programs, but all of them are watered down in one sense or another. My understanding, at least from John Fund's article, is that the program in Utah is going to be as close as possible to a true school choice program, so that's very exciting.
That's great. Well, we'll see, and then hopefully it's not going to be income dependent either, which has always been a problem. Like, they always looked at the income needs of the people, and they put vouchers in those areas, and then other places, the people that still want the choice because of income, they're not getting it. So,
right.
That cutoff has always been tough. But as we always like to end these interviews, the question is this, and that is, what can people do to help this get this program of school vouchers on the road? Is there any place that you can recommend they should go to learn more about it?
Yeah, there's a number of places they can go. I highly recommend the Milton and Rose Friedman Center for Public Policy, I believe it's called. But if they Google for Milton Rose Friedman, that center is going to pop up, and they are excellent providing information about school choice. And definitely contact your local state representative and state senator. They really do care, because the closer they are to the people, you know, the more your voice counts. So they do want to hear from you, and let them know your concerns, and make sure that you educate yourself first, and give them a call or write letters and organize campaigns to do that. And you'll be surprised how much your voice actually counts at the state and local level.
Great. Well, it's been great to have you on the program. It's been the Honorable Jason Bedrick, Yehoshua Bedrick, state representative, state of New Hampshire. Great to have you. Have a great job.
Thank you. You too.
Take care.
Okay, let's do something different. Here's from the Hask concert with Yoel Sharabi, entitled Fiddler by Hask.
A fiddler on the roof sounds crazy, no? But in our little village of New York, you might say every one of us is a fiddler on the roof, trying to scratch out a pleasant simple tune without breaking his neck. It isn't easy. You may ask what we are all doing here tonight. Well, if you ask, the answer is Hask. It's time for music. And how do we keep our balance? That I can tell you in one word. Tradition, 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 tradition. Because of our tradition, we have kept our balance for many years. Here at the Hask concerts, we have a tradition for everything. Everything. Every musician, every performer, every Fisher Hall, everyone and each of you, the conductor, even the producers. You may ask, how did this tradition get started? I'll tell you. I don't know, but it's a tradition. Because of our tradition, everyone here knows who he is and what Hask expects him to do. Here is a beautiful tune which I made it into a special prayer for these special children. May Hashem protect and defend you. May He always shield you from shame. May you come to be in Israel a shining name. May you be encouraged and inspired. May you be deserving of praise. Strengthen them, Hashem, and keep them from the stranger's ways. May Hashem bless you and grant you long life.
preserve you from pain. Favor them, Hashem, with happiness and peace. Oh, hear us special prayer. Two hearts and our good fortune. Be happy, be healthy, long life. And if our good fortune ever comes, or oh, whatever comes, bring Lahaim to heart. And if a good fortune ever comes, you'll know whatever comes, bring Lehi.
Feminine Perspective is brought to you each week by Lens Landscaping at 412-372-5215. Lens specializes in shrub and tree care and provides free estimates. Lens says, I'll treat your land like it was my own. Call Lens at 412-372-5215. And now, here's Devorah DeLynn.
Hey, how are you? What's up? You've probably heard these words a million times in your life. After all, it's only polite to inquire after a person's health and well-being. But Judaism takes it one step further. When a Jew greets another, he says, Shalom Aleichem, or peace unto you. Peace is an integral part of the Jewish culture and way of life. Ahavas Yisrael, loving your fellow Jew, refraining from Lashon Hara, evil gossip, all these mitzvos and more serve to intensify and strengthen the important value of peace. But as we know from experience, true peace can only be accomplished when we adhere to the Torah's idea of peace, which is the only true idea. In this week's Torah portion, Parshas Yisro, we learn about the most important event the world has ever had the privilege to experience, the giving of the Torah. When the Torah was given on Har Sinai, the world itself was changed, not just the Jewish people. People, animals, nature, weather, the normal functions of the world were attuned and aware of what was taking place in the Sinai desert. The Jewish people themselves had to be prepared for such a gift. The verse speaks about their journeys and uses the word Mei Refidim, that they traveled from Rephidim, the place they camped before they came to the Sinai desert. Because the Torah chooses to remind us of their previous campsite, there must be a significance to it. The place was called Rephidim because it comes from the word Rafu, or lax. The Jewish people had become lax in the Torah, therefore they deserved to be attacked by Amalek, as we learned in the previous Parsha. When they traveled away from Rephidim, we can understand that they sincerely regretted their mistakes and had now repented. Usually, when a nation is in fear of attack, they move to high ground in order to have an advantage over their enemies. Yet we see that Bnei Israel traveled toward a desert and in fact camped opposite a mountain, putting themselves in a vulnerable situation. This is an even stronger indication that they did teshuva. They believed so firmly that Hashem would protect them that they went to the place He indicated, even though they were in an exposed situation. Another interesting point is brought out. Normally, the verse uses a word that is in plural form when speaking about the Jewish people. Here, it uses the word that applies to one person, Vayichan, and he camped. When they traveled from Rephidim, they put aside their jealousy and competition. When a person believes he is deserving of respect, he becomes angry at those who don't give it to him. This happened with the Yidden at Rephidim. They became divided and angry at each other. But upon reaching Har Sinai and seeing that Hashem chose a small, humble mountain upon which to give them the Torah, they realized a very important lesson. Human and animals are really very similar. They need food, companionship, shelter, etc. The only thing that differs is the placement of their head. An animal's head is generally in line with the rest of his body, while a person's head is on top of his body. This shows us that the only thing separating a human from an animal is his seichel, or intellect. While animals are governed by their instincts alone, a person has capabilities to understand and make choices. The Jewish people realized this and chose to do away with their animalistic tendencies of crude domination and made a choice to become Hashem's chosen people. Have a good Shabbos.
Now it's time for another classic story from our master storyteller, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
The wind howled. The rain came down in torrents. It was weather for ducks, not for people. There wasn't anyone out, and those who had to venture forth for some reason or another ran from one place of cover to another. In Reb Chaim's house, the maid was setting the table for lunch. The rabbi of Izmir was expected shortly, and she didn't want him to wait for his hot soup. There was a step. Reb Chaim entered, took off his dripping overcoat, and gave it to the maid to hang up. "Brr," he shivered. "It's freezing outside." He began coughing. "How glad I am that I made hot soup today," the Rebbetzin said. "That is just the thing you need for your cough. We don't want it to develop into anything worse, chas v'shalom. Come, wash your hands and sit down to eat while it is still hot." As soon as he was seated, the maid entered bearing a steaming bowl of soup, which she set before him. Just as Reb Chaim was lifting the first spoonful to his mouth, there was a knock at the front door. His wife rushed to answer it, not wanting her husband to get up. There stood an elderly woman who kept a stall in the marketplace. "Is the rabbi home?" she asked. Yes, the Rebbetzin hesitated, "but he has just come home for lunch. Can the matter wait? Could you come back in an hour or so?" "Certainly," said the old woman, not wanting to disturb the rabbi from his meal. She turned around and thrust herself into the rain. "Who was at the door?" the rabbi asked curiously. "Oh, an older woman from the community." "What did she want?" "She wanted to speak to you." Hearing this, Reb Chaim jumped up from his chair. "An elderly woman came here to speak to me, and you sent her away?" he asked incredulously. "Come," he called to his shamus. "We are going to go to the woman's house." "But it is so stormy outside," said the shamus. He couldn't persuade the rabbi. "Never mind, we must go at once," said Reb Chaim. A fearsome wind blasted them, almost throwing them off balance. Reb Chaim walked with sure steps, battling the fierce wind. His attendant plodded reluctantly behind. Finally, they reached the marketplace. Even this was almost deserted. Only a few isolated customers looking for bargains were fingering the sodden fruits and vegetables. The two threaded their way between the puddles and mud until they finally reached the rickety door of the woman. Reb Chaim knocked on the paint-chipped door. He could hear heavy steps approaching. Then the door opened and the woman peered out at him. "Rabbi," she cried out in alarm, seeing who stood at her doorstep. Why did you trouble yourself to come here on this freezing day? I was about to come to you myself in about an hour. Forgive me, good woman, for having sent you away from my house. It was done without my knowledge. For had I known that you were waiting in the doorway, I would surely have gotten up to talk to you. Standing there bewildered, the woman managed to reply, Yes, of course I forgive you, but it was hardly necessary for you to come all the way here. After having answered the woman's question, the rabbi made his way back home. After he arrived there, he removed his sopping overcoat and was seated by the crackling fire, nursing a cup of tea in his hands. His wife dared to ask, Why were you so upset that I had sent the woman away? As you know, I had very valid reasons for doing so. The rabbi sat back and said, Let me tell you a story that is brought in the Mechilta on Parshas Mishpatim. Shimon and Rabbi Yishmael were two of the 10 martyrs of the Roman period. When they were taken out to be executed, the first turned to the second and said, I examined my deeds thoroughly, but cannot find any reason that I should be punished. Rabbi Yishmael replied, Did it ever happen that someone came to your house to clarify a law or ask a halacha question, and you detained him while you finished something that you needed to do? He continued, The Torah states that you shall not oppress anyone. This rule includes that a judge is not allowed to postpone announcement of a sentence. In this case, every small detail is considered painful for those involved. Then, Rabbi Shimon heard this, he said, The Torah states that you shall not oppress anyone. And it is extremely important that you do not cause anyone to suffer. Even a judge who postpones announcement of a sentence and thereby causes the litigants to worry is over this avera. After Rabbi Shimon heard this, he said, You have comforted me. Do you see now, Reb Chaim turned to his wife, why I was so upset? I prefer to eat cold meals on wintry days the rest of my life, as long as I am not considered one who oppresses the members of his congregation. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser wishing you all a good Shabbos.
As we wrap up another 2 years of continuous Jewish broadcasting for the Pittsburgh Jewish community, a couple of reminders. Today at 5 p.m. at the Carnegie Mellon University Center, students and faculty members are going to get together for Shabbat 1000, just for students and faculty. Look at Shabbat1000.net for more information. And Chabad of Pittsburgh, Jewish Learning Institute, Kabbalah of Character, Wednesdays through March 14th at two locations, 7:30 p.m. at the Yeshiva Girls School or 12:15 downtown at the Heinz 57 Center. Don't forget the meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous. If you want more information, call Ilana, 412-422-2224, to get information on a very successful way to lose and keep that weight off. If you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, please call us at 412-979-5770, or you can email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. And I want to thank the Honorable Jason, or Yehoshua Bedrick, for a fascinating discussion of school vouchers and how he manages in the New Hampshire legislature. And, of course, our faithful and cutting-edge staff, Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, MusicalMoish.com, Dr. Michael Schulman, Mr. Vordelin, and our engineer, Jeremiah Lebossenstein, for another outstanding show. And don't forget, candlelighting time this week, as we mentioned before, is no later than 5:30 p.m., and it's been a ton of fun, but I'm out of here. Until next week, I'm Hirsch DeLynn. Have a wonderful and restful Shabbat.